I'm very happy to have a friend, Mary Beth Tyson, in the studio. I want to be you, Mary Beth. I want to be able to travel around the world and sail and go to all the countries that exist out there that I've never gone to. And I thought, wow, when you come back, we were trying to get you to do an interview, but it was so hard with the time changes and differences. It never quite worked out.
Right, right. Well, especially because a lot of the time it was a 13-hour difference and not just a 12, which we've worked with before.
Yeah, so basically it would be like I'd be trying to record at 8 in the morning and it'd be 9 o'clock at night or so, or more even, it'd be like 9 or 10 in the morning, it'd be midnight there, so it was hard. So I'm so glad you're back here, and we can talk story about your adventures. Now, for those of you that don't know Mary Beth, she has a wonderful life. She's a therapist. She does some intensive therapy work, right, for people who've gone through crisis.
Right.
And you are registered for that, and so you get some intense counseling and work done, therapy, while you're here. And then you and your husband go to Croatia and have an apartment there as well.
Right.
And he loves sailing.
And he loves sailing, and I love sailing. And so we spend half the year sailing around the Mediterranean area.
How wonderful is that?
It's pretty incredible. I'm so grateful. I cannot tell you.
This year you had a lot of adventures, some with friends that you did some women traveling. That sounded fascinating. And I wanted to be there. I don't even know where you start, but basically, let's talk about Turkey. Let's talk Turkey. Since
okay.
Thanksgiving's coming up.
Well, Turkey was woven in and out through most of the summer. So.
Oh, was it? How did that happen? Explain that.
Well, we have our apartment in Croatia, and we had some people coming to see us there as well, but we had the boat in Turkey.
Oh. And where in Turkey?
Well, we actually started in I want to say Kos Island, Greece, and we did some island hopping north. So we went through like Patmos, Chios, Lesbos. That was all just fascinating. It's very different than the other Greek islands.
Huh.
And then we sailed across to the Turkish coast and spent, so that was just the first couple of weeks, and then the rest of the summer we were on the Turkish coast.
Well, I have to say, I mean, truthfully, the Turkish coast to me seems almost mystical. I'm trying to imagine the Turkish coast. It is like, what's it like? I mean, because it's such a different place, and I've never been to, it's on my bucket list, I've never been there. So tell me what it's like sailing on around Turkey versus, again, I've been to the Greek islands, I think, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, but what's it like in Turkey?
Well, Turkey is a lot more mountainous than you might realize, and a lot greener than you might realize. I mean, it does have deserty areas and flat areas, but along the coast, the mountains are just spectacular, and you'll see a lot of greenery. And then, of course, there are all these ruins along the way from different eras, you know, from the Greek era and from earlier, the Lycians. Do I want to say it was the Lycians? I'll have to think about that.
Well, I went to Ephesus years ago, but it was part of a Greek, you know, when you go to Greece, you usually typically go on a cruise, and it usually includes Ephesus. And I loved it, but that was before everyone was going to Mary's house, and I never got a chance to see that. And a lot of people now are taking tours to Mary's house.
Right,
and
I did miss Mary's house, but Ephesus is in Turkey, so there you have it.
I have.
You have been to Turkey.
Yeah, but not the places like you went to that I really would have liked going to.
Right. Well, we did it all. So because we flew in and out a couple of times, but we also drove in and out once. So we got to drive from Croatia through Bulgaria. And that was interesting.
How do you do that when you're, I mean, it's not easy. So tell me about, do you have a car in Croatia or do you rent a car?
No, we have a car.
Oh, you have a car.
We like to do road trips, and we used to do a lot more of them. This year we didn't do too many. They were more like sightseeing in Turkey when we would go rent a car and go to Cappadocia and do the balloons.
How do you drive to Croatia to Turkey?
You go through Bosnia and Serbia. And then you go through Bulgaria and right into Istanbul from there.
It's a long drive?
I think we did it in 3 or 4 days so that we could do some sightseeing. There were some really nice spots to see in Bulgaria. And Bulgaria is also very green. I didn't realize.
I didn't either.
I know.
So what is it? I imagine it's a totally different kind of journey when you're driving.
Oh, totally. And as it is when you're sailing. I mean, when you fly into a place or you cruise into a place, you see designated things, yeah. right? And so it's more tourist-based, where a lot of times we're just driving through tiny little villages and past farmhouses, and it's just, you really get a flavor for what life is like.
Does not speaking the language become an issue when you're in those areas?
It was for a while, until we got further down the coast, where a lot more British people tend to go. Mm-hmm. And so there was more English. But when we first got into Ivalique and some of those earlier towns, there was no English. And I did learn some Turkish, a little bit of Turkish.
Really? Wow.
Not a lot, but a few things. So there was a learning curve. At first, I felt like a fish out of water,
really?
And I wasn't sure if I was going to like Turkey. And then the longer we were there, the more we just loved it. And everyone who came,
across the top, drive through up and then down, or where did you land up driving into Turkey?
We drove in straight across the whatever that is, the strait where, that goes into the Black Sea.
Right.
And then We spent a few days in Istanbul and got to do the Whirling Dervishes and see the Blue Mosque and the Hagia Sophia.
Is
and
it as beautiful as it looks?
Palace. Oh, just incredible. We did a Bosphorus cruise so we could look at the Asian side and the European side. Some people may not know that Turkey is the only country in the world that spans two continents. So the Istanbul side is the last of Europe. And then once you cross that river, you're starting into Asia.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't spend more time.
In Istanbul?
Yeah.
Well, I would have liked to, but it was really tight this year. We didn't give ourselves breaks in between things,
yeah.
and that's not going to ever happen again.
Yeah.
We were actually not alone for about 2 months every single day. If a visitor was leaving, the next one was coming in.
Wow.
And at one point when we drove back, we flew to Croatia. We got in and at 6 the next morning drove to Dubrovnik to pick up my niece and her husband who were visiting us. And we had another house guest already.
It's almost like work.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun, but it was busy. It was a busy, busy summer.
So tell me more about where else you went in Turkey. And I'm trying to figure out, now that you've got your car, where the boat was in all this. So, I mean, this time was your car. Then it was their second trip with the boat?
So we started with the boat. And then when we flew back in to see my niece and host them, then we took the car and went down.
See.
And then we left it in somewhere. I want to say Marmaris, maybe. Marmaris, I think, is where we left it. And that area, that's when it starts to get really pretty. So the further you go, is it south or west, you get down past Edom, you start going to Marmaris and
are along the coast.
Bodrum and Göcek and Fethiye and Kash. It just gets more and more beautiful as you go. And part of it, the area around Göcek and Fethiye is a national park, a marine park. And so the water is incredibly beautiful and pristine and clear. And
did you do any diving?
A lot of turquoise. We did a lot of snorkeling, mm-hmm. and we haven't dived this year, but yeah. we also did a really cool boat trip to Kokovo, which was an ancient Roman settlement that sunk.
Wow.
So you can actually do a drive-by for part of it and look over the side and see ruins down below the boat as well. And then there's a beautiful big hill with a hilltop medieval town that's tiny up there, and it's just incredible.
I think it sounds amazing. Now, I should mention you've got a wonderful blog, and you're a professional photographer, which really adds to the excitement. So, I mean, when people want to see and hear more, they can go to your blog. What's your blog site?
It's mbsworld.online, so it's not .org or .com, but .online. So MBS for Mary Beth's World, mbsworld.online. And I've got a couple blogs coming up. One is my favorite Greek islands, because I've been to about 35 of them now. And the other one will probably be based on the volunteer work I did in Kenya, which I guess we'll get around to in a little bit.
So what else about Turkey? Now, here you're doing this. At this point, you're in your boat. You're going from harbor to harbor.
Right. And we're dropping anchor and just having dinner. And they have, oh, it's so quaint, because when you're out in some bay, a boat will come up with bread. They make these big, like, flying saucer-shaped loaves of bread.
Wow.
And they'll sell those, and they'll have honey and a few other things. There's actually, there was a crepe maker, and he and his wife would come around making crepes. And what else did we have? We had a lot of them selling fruit. And then there was actually a supermarket. So there's a French supermarket that we used to shop at in France called Carrefour Market, which means crossroads. And they actually have supermarket boats.
Wow.
And you can, they'll come and hang out in a bay for a half hour, and everybody takes their little dinghies over and does their grocery shopping.
How amazing is that?
And so we did. I can't remember what we got. I think we actually found Allen's non-alcoholic beers, which were hard to find in Turkey.
I bet.
So we found those on one of those boats.
So tell me how, you're dealing with a lot of different currencies at this point. So in Turkey, you had to change into currencies, right?
Right, right.
What currency do they use in Turkey?
The Turkish lira.
Ah.
And
is it strong? Like, I know in England right now, the pound was down and euro was down, and so we were pretty equivalent.
We were up. Dollar was up. But, mm-hmm. No, the rate of exchange was really good, and you can get an incredible value for hotels and meals and drinks. And at one point, we stayed in a resort with a dock, and that was fun. So we had a.
Did you know in advance, or just?
I knew about it. I waited till a particular group of friends was coming that she always likes to every once in a while get off the boat and go do something like massages and things like that. So I got us booked in there one time, and we got to swim in the pool and have our meals
nice.
At this really nice resort.
Do your laundry?
And do our laundry. That's always the big thing. Yes.
I can understand that.
Right.
Absolutely. It's like, well, okay, you know, just do the laundry. Because how far can you get? I mean, because you can't pack heavy on a trip like this. You're going from place to place. How much can you pack on a trip like this?
Well, most people just bring a small suitcase or with a backpack or hand carrying a backpack or something like that, because there's not a lot of room to store bags either on the boat.
Uh-huh.
So one girlfriend, I don't know how she did it, but she did a hand carry and a backpack. She went to the UK, then came sailing for a month, and then we went to Kenya and Tanzania together, and somehow she managed to pack for everything in space that small.
I can't imagine. Probably just two or three changes of clothes.
Right, right.
Just a couple pairs of shoes.
Right.
I can't do that. I've never been able to do that. That's the hardest part for me. So going around the boat cruise part of Turkey, how many days about? How many days were you on the boat around the ports of Turkey?
Well, basically from May through September.
Oh, you were doing this all the time?
We were doing it all the time. Oh. We'd leave it, and then we do have a partner that would come use the boat, too, when we would go off and do some other things. So,
I see. I did not realize that.
So it'll be, we would leave it in a marina. It's in a marina in Greece right now, so we'll be bringing it back to Croatia next year.
Wow. So tell me about this lovely little place you were talking about, this green, this thing that was unusual. I want to hear more details about some of those special places you found, the secret places.
Well, actually, Pamukkale is not that secret. It's one of the top two places there, but that is amazing. They've got these white silica, sparkly pools, and hot springs
wonderful.
Are coming down.
Wow.
And on my Facebook page, I've got a picture of myself wearing wings, and that was in Pamukkale, so that was a lot of fun. And at Pamukkale are the ancient Greek ruins of Hierapolis, or Hierapolis. And the big thing there that's just spectacular is there's a temple to Saturn, who is Hades. And they built this temple over a fissure where toxic deathly fumes come out.
Oh my gosh.
And they put above it all these seats, right, these benches, and the priests would sacrifice cattle by bringing them in, and in the morning the gases would come up, but they dissipate by the time they get about chest high, so the cattle would die and the priests wouldn't. And these were offerings to Hades. Isn't that weird?
Wow.
And they had a big statue. The one they had there was a redone, you know, a modern statue.
Interesting because, you know, there was similar. Sometimes I'd be interested in seeing the similarities with some of the Grecian energies and things that might have carried over from Egypt as well. Of course, I don't think Egypt sacrificed as much as that, but I don't know. But they did definitely have, you know, there was not Horus, but which is the one? Was it Horus? That's a
Anubis.
Cow with the,
was that, it Anubis? Anubis maybe. Was the funerary god. Hathor is the cow goddess.
Cow god, right? That's something of Hathor.
She's a fertility goddess in the Egyptian pantheon. But so there were a lot of Greco-Roman. We went to Aphrodisias, which was dedicated to Aphrodite, who's my favorite Greek goddess.
Were there a lot of statues and ruins?
There were some, and there were some ruins. The thing that was most fascinating, there were these, I guess you would call them friezes. So there were these long walls with blocks, and each block had a different face carved in it. Some of them were real people. Some of them were gods and goddesses. Some of them were people who lived in the town. And yeah, it was fascinating to look. I just was taking pictures of all these faces, and I thought, what am I going to do with all these faces? Why am I taking these pictures?
But they were fascinating. Yeah, some of those are great. How can you not, right?
Because a lot of times when you're looking at something like that, you're looking at the same kinds of faces over and over again, and these were not. I mean, the headdresses were different, everything.
So I have to ask you, it's always a big question of mine. I have a nice camera, not like as good as yours, but, you know, it's a Canon, I don't know, EOS 20 or whatever, I forget what it is, the one that is like about $1,200. Well, I got that with a couple of lenses. And then I have my iPhone 13 Plus. And I always go, do I really need my camera? Because when I'm traveling, you move fast and you're running space is an issue too, because these cameras are heavy. They have the lenses. I land up always going, should I take? And I land up just taking my phone, and I just use my phone. So what do you do about that? Because you're a photographer.
I do both. Mm-hmm. And some things are better. The iPhone is definitely better in low light. And I got some amazing shots. I don't know if you saw my leopard pictures on Instagram and Facebook, but the leopard in the tree with a bush buck.
Wow.
Incredible. So fat he was. Just gorging himself on this creature. And I was sitting under the tree, and my iPhone pictures came out amazingly well.
Wow.
But I always take both because you never know what quality you're going to get. And, you know, if I see a herd of elephants, I can zoom in and take more close-ups with the big camera, and I can play with a wider view on the iPhone.
Yeah, I guess if you're going to look at it that way, and you know you're going to have time to go back and really pick something out and make it something special. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I took thousands. I'm just now getting to my Kenya pictures to start organizing those because I haven't, I'm starting with that. I didn't work with my photos at all. Some
it's
are
not
unusual.
When you're traveling, how can you? I mean, when there's classes, like you've done classes, and you do it in the daytime, and at night you get... And you just focus on doing it at night. But you had company. There's no way when you have company and you're going out that you can do it. And it can be exhausting traveling all the time. So
it can.
So you finished that part of Turkey. When did you land up meeting your friends and going to Scotland through all of that?
Well, early on, actually. So sometime after we got in to Turkey, within a few days, I got on a plane. So I had packed for both Scotland and Turkey. And I went to visit with a girlfriend in Scotland who was checking out her heritage. And then we also met up with two other women who were checking out their heritage.
In Edinburgh?
The friend and I met up in Edinburgh. And the other two, we met up with them in Tarbert because we're all sailors. And there was a regatta in Tarbert.
Oh. Now, where's Tarbert?
Tarbert is west, just near the Isle of Skye, which, oh my gosh.
Just on the west
the
end.
The Isle of Skye.
I've never been there. Everyone raves about it.
There's something about the light. It's angelic.
Really?
Beautiful. Just so beautiful.
Did you actually get to stay for a day in Skye?
A couple of days, yeah.
Oh, nice.
We started in Edinburgh and got to walk and see a lot there.
Then
we went up north and stayed in the Inverness area for a couple of days. And a lot of the things that were in the show, the Outlander series.
I love Outlander.
Are not filmed in Inverness,
no.
I found out. So we missed a couple of those things.
But they are filmed in Scotland.
They are. They're filmed in northern Scotland. And twice I saw a guy dressed in Highlander clothing leading a tour. And so the second time I was talking with him. And it turns out he was on that series, the Outlander show. And so he does Outlander tours and just a really, really sweet man. So we enjoyed that a lot. Went over to the Isle of Skye and then down to Tarbert. And in that region is a lot. One of my friends is a Campbell. So we got into a lot of the Campbell castles. And Cawdor, I think, was one of them. And there are several. And so that was fun. Doing the heritage with the course or my thing. That's what I really wanted to see. And I got to do those and the cairns, the burial chambers.
And that's kind of like what you get in Ireland, right? The cairns?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah, those go back to the Druid time, right?
Right, right.
So some of those are like 5,000 years old. And
magical. Very incredible. And a lot of them, you know, have cattle and sheep herds in them. And so those photos were kind of fun because I got to incorporate the domestic life in with the stones.
I saw a special about that. I think is it on the Isle of Skye they have those circle of stones like they use in Outlander? There's somewhere, one of those islands on the coast have the stones that they use in the opening scenes of Outlander.
Well, I'm not sure about that one, but I think so. I think I was at that place, and I can't think of what it was called, but it was in the kind of northern, northwestern section. Well,
and then I heard they actually recreated it from that spot to actually have
they
it.
They did,
yeah. But they used those stones as an example.
They did.
Very mystical, of course, and we love that kind of thing.
Right.
And you were doing this driving.
We were. I learned how to drive on the left side of the road.
Oh, how was that?
My husband's British, and I never would do it. But we had a French car, which is like an American car. So when I tried to drive in the UK before, I was on the wrong side of the wheel to be on that side of the road, and I was in the ditch, and that was really scary. But
it is.
It took a few days, but then suddenly it just clicks that you keep the white line in the center of the road.
Yes,
you know, whether you're driving on the left or the right, whatever car you're in, you keep
but,
the white line
but
there.
The roundabouts.
Oh, right, right. We just follow everybody.
Yeah, the
else.
Roundabouts. You know, because you it's not just going around, but it's getting off on the correct side when you're landing up after going in a circle and landing, making sure you land up going on the left side, which is kind of hard when you're going in a roundabout because you normally in a roundabout, if you've gone them, you think, okay, I'm just going to land up there on that road and you go to the right rather than the left. So you have to,
right?
That's kind of the thing. But so, I mean, good on you that you figured were able to do that. That's a huge thing if you're going to Ireland or going to, yeah.
And then a couple of the girls came back to Turkey so we all flew together to Turkey, and Alan picked us up, and that was when we went to Ephesus, actually. He had already been while we were gone, but we went, and
to where again?
Ephesus.
Oh, Ephesus,
and So we saw Ephesus, we saw Aphrodisias, then further down the coast, there's a place called Kaunos, and another town called Phetia, and both in Kaunos and Phetia, they have these temples that are carved into the mountain that look a lot like, in Jordan, the Petra town. And they were burial chambers for the wealthy or the royalty. And they're very, very ancient. And those were very fascinating. And then the underwater city of Kekova. But the last thing we did right before we finished up was we rented a car with our friends and went to Cappadocia. And we were all just blown away. And we did the balloon ride over Cappadocia. That's a big deal. They have hundreds of balloons. And you're going over this massive, massive miles and miles and miles of these rock formations and weird stone things. And then they have these things called fairy chimneys. And they go up. They're like pointed rocks, like tent rocks, and some of them also look like mushrooms.
I've seen a special about those places. They look amazing.
And so we were in some of them.
It was a whole city. They used to live in those, some of those.
Yeah, they did. They did. And they also lived underground. We also went to an underground city. But we went through the ferry things, and then we flew over them all, and that was just
I bet you got some
incredible.
Amazing
I've
photos.
I've got a video, too. They did an electronic thing with all of us in it and all the views. And
now,
everything.
You jumped over this underwater city, which I never heard of. So tell me about the underwater city.
Well, the Kekovo, the place over by Cash, was a Roman city. And parts of it are above water, but they were further inland back then. And then the parts that are under the water that you can just look down and see are the part they were above the water originally, but of course the oceans have risen. So,
well, you know what amazes me? Because I remember when I went to Ephesus, it had to be 30 years ago. Yeah, maybe even longer. But what blew me away is they tell you when you go to Ephesus, well, this used to be here where the water came in and Anthony and Cleopatra got off their boat
right
here, which was so at that. For some reason, that's way inland, like a mile or two inland from where the water used to come. But the
water
doesn't
exactly.
come in there. Water's way out there
exactly.
now. You have to take a bus ride if you're coming in from mm-hmm. the harbor. I think about an hour bus ride at least.
You
to get
can
in.
See the water from Ephesus,
can you?
But it's about a mile away.
Oh, I thought it was more than that even.
Maybe two, but yeah. It's you can see it. And then, right, so it's just amazing. And there's just so much history there from so many eras. It's just amazing.
Okay, so this was all being done in June and July?
And August and September. So we finished
so
up on September 30th.
Wow, months doing this.
Yes, and with just different friends coming and going. The last month, it was this group of friends that have been with us from the beginning when we first did our test drive on the boat 8 years ago, I think it was, or seven. So
then where did Africa come into this whole mix?
So then Alan and Tom, our friend, took the boat to Greece to leave it in a marina there with instructions for them to do some maintenance on it. And we have a friend that lives in that island, and so she's kind of overseeing that for us. And myself and the other woman flew to Kenya. And we had signed up to do a safari, really affordable safari. And we got there 3 days early, so we hired a private driver, and we went to the elephant orphanage, and we went to the giraffe center.
Now, where are you staying here?
We were in Karen, which is a suburb of Nairobi.
No, but I mean the lodge. What kind of hotel, lodge?
Hotel,
whatever,
yeah.
Hotel there.
But it was wonderful. So we got to interact with the babies, and that was, I mean,
so
you don't
these
really,
are preserves that you're visiting.
Yeah, the elephant orphanage is the Sheldrick Elephant Orphanage. You can't really interact with them, but you can see them, and they're just adorable. They're all orphaned babies, mm-hmm. elephants. And then the giraffe.
Was that the one? I just heard one of the preserves like that for elephants had, they actually had a mating of a couple of elephants, and they had one of their first babies born. In captivity there. But it's a large space.
Well, there's another one in South Africa.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And I think there's
that might have been it.
Both
yeah.
of them. So, and then the giraffe, there's a hotel called Giraffe Manor where the giraffes will lean in and eat your food and that sort of thing.
Really?
And it's like 1,000 or two a night. So we went to the giraffe center for an hour and just fed the giraffes and got to learn about them. And then we went, and Karen Blixen was a real famous woman who lived there.
I love Karen Blixen, out of Africa.
Yes, we went to her old house and her
Such
museum.
A great movie.
And her art was incredible. I don't know if
I
you
didn't
she
know about the
was
art.
Maybe a better artist than she was a writer. She's
wow.
amazing. And then Kazuri Beads is employing all these Kenyan women to make and paint ceramic beads, and we had fun doing that. And then we did Susie's first game drive, because of course I'd been to Africa last year, right? So that knocked her socks off. I mean, one of the first things we saw were lions with a zebra. And
great photos.
Yes.
Now these is probably better with iPhone, right? I mean, do you have time?
No, with these? I got good ones both ways around. Yeah, I'll have to show you some. And then from there we joined up with a safari. Oh, we did go to the museum too in Nairobi, and that was just amazing with the artifacts there and the history there, just incredible. And they also had a reptile exhibit And I got to...
What kind of reptiles are you seeing there?
They had everything from black mambos to all kinds of lizards, and there was some kind of constrictor that I got to have my picture done with. I can't remember what kind of constrictor it was.
Where did you see this fat leopard?
The fat leopard? Well, that was in Amboseli, and which we got to later. So we did the we got on the safari, and we did just, you know, a couple of game drives every day, and we got to do some.
Is it done by jeep?
So in South Africa they have those open jeeps. Uh-huh. You know, these are not open. These look like a regular SUV.
Huh.
And then the top can be lifted. Uh-huh. And you get about a foot to look out and to take pictures from. So it's, I guess, in some ways considered safer because, you know, if some animal, rogue animal, was going to attack you, it would be hard for that to happen. But the thing I like about Kenya is that there's a lot less poaching. The people are very invested in taking care of the wildlife there. And the wildlife, you can tell, they're calmer. You know, they're more accepting of people driving up to take a look at them. I mean, if you got out of the car, that would be another story. But because they are wild.
What did you see? Now, you saw?
I saw.
Zebras.
I saw zebras, giraffes. There's some endangered ones up there. The gravy zebra is endangered, and the reticulated giraffe I saw is endangered.
Reticulated.
Well, there's three kinds of giraffes.
Yes.
And the reticulated one is, most of them look like they're light with brown spots.
Yeah.
The reticulated one looks like it's brown with a white spider web on it.
Oh, interesting.
It's really pretty, yeah.
Wow.
And the males are always darker than the females. I've learned so much. I can tell you more about rhino poop than anyone else you know, because I did some tracking and all of that later. But
I guess it's
But
important.
On safari, it was all about seeing the animals and having the pictures. We saw warthogs. We saw jackals. We saw wildebeest. We saw buffalo. We saw cheetah. We saw lions. And the elephants are off the charts. But the rhinos, of course... The most of the endangered rhinos are up there.
The white rhinos?
The northern white, there are two left. They're females, both
Only
of them.
Two, my gosh.
A mother and a daughter.
Wow.
And they are at this place where I did volunteer work at the inn. So that my last week, I was at Opejeta Conservancy, a private conservancy. And they are doing in vitro. So it's a big deal. So what happened was a few years ago, the Czech Republic had the last four or five northern white rhinos on the planet, and they sent them to Kenya. And they've lived with armed guards day and night.
Wow.
And Opejeta figured out how to do it. But they not only have the armed guards, they have bloodhounds. They have cameras on the fences, on the electrified fences. The politicians are not paid off to look the other way. They do enforce no poaching. So they have eliminated poaching on that reserve in the last 5 or 6 years.
Amazing, yeah.
So what they're doing is now the only two that are left are these females. They saved the sperm from the males, and they've harvested the eggs from the females, and they have taken a couple of southern white rhinos to keep the northern one's healthy, and they're going to do in vitro this year. So I also got to see the male who's going to let everyone know when the girls are in heat. And I think he might even just be a black rhino, but he's a rhino, and mm-hmm. his job is to be a boy. And so then they'll do that later next year. So it's an expensive project, but I think it's a worthy one. And because they're also learning a lot about saving the rest of the rhinos, they have a huge black rhino herd, and they also have some of the southern whites. And they're very different. I didn't realize they're very different. What they eat and their behavior are very, very different. And their poop is very different, too.
Well, that doesn't seem to make sense. Why would their poop be different? I don't know why that would happen.
Well, black rhinos are browsers, so they eat bushes.
I see.
So they eat bark and branches and leaves. And white rhinos are grazers, and they eat grass. So, and then they also, their behavior is a little different, and a lot of things are different. Their ears one of them has furrier ears than the other. And so, so the poop will show whether it's grass or whether it's twigs. And
so how many days are you into this? I mean, this seems like you spent a lot of time doing these.
I was almost a month.
Wow.
So I was 3 or 4 days in Karen, then 11, 12 days on safari, and then 8 days at Old Pejeta. And then they were just, wow, just amazing.
Now, you know, Mary Beth, that, I mean, a lot of people say it's expensive going on safari. And I've seen some people talk about prices, and it's like, whoa.
Well, you can spend easy, and in a month, you could spend $75,000, no problem.
Oh, my gosh.
But the safari we signed up for was $6,000.
It's still expensive.
And it was a small group safari, so there were only 12
of
us.
Well, that's good.
So there were two vehicles.
Yeah.
So, but it was... And we went to all the same kinds of places the other people go to. We just didn't stay in five-star luxury the
right.
whole time. We did stay a couple times in really nice accommodations. And then
What do you eat? What kind of food do you eat
in
Africa?
Oh, my God. It's so good. The food is amazing. They have different spices there. So it doesn't taste... It's spicy, but it's not hot. It doesn't taste like Latin food. It doesn't taste like Indian food. It doesn't taste like Thai food. It doesn't like Chinese. It's just really good food. Really good. And they were really good with special diets for the people that had them, gluten-free or dairy-free or whatever. They're on top of it.
So you probably took a ton of pictures. I mean, how could
thousands.
You not when you're seeing, yeah.
Thousands.
When you're seeing a white rhinoceros and you're seeing these different... I mean, zebras, you know, and you see all this, it's got to be amazing. I mean, that is going to be a bit of a job going back over and trying to work on organizing all those pictures when you have that many.
Well, I'm just about done getting the ones selected from that month in Africa, so that'll be great.
So when you have all this amazing, I mean, truly once-in-a-lifetime pictures you've been able to take in places that people only dream about. Yeah, go ahead.
And I do have a friend in Kenya, and I spent a couple of days with her as well.
Oh, wow.
So that didn't cost me anything, right?
That's nice. So do you think about taking those and doing an exhibit? Do you take your best photos and think of doing something to put them out there for sale?
Never have thought about doing an exhibit, but some of these photos are so spectacular this time, I just might have to... look into it.
I really think you should think about it. I mean, and there are a lot of places that, you know, probably would be interested in having an exhibit of something like that. I'm not sure how or where, but I know that, you know, even if you decide to go and do it at a coffee shop or something like that, it'd be really interesting for people just to be able to see what you gathered, you know, through your eyes. I mean, we can talk about it, but once you see a picture, you know, it does have more than 1,000 words, I think, for each picture you do. You can get an amazing thing, or you could even take those and make them into a mini doc. You know, it takes a lot more work to do that, but then you have something that you can put online if you take those pictures and just make a slideshow. You'd have to have local music or something you'd have to buy rights for underneath it, I would imagine.
Well, a lot of those songs are traditional, so a lot of those songs
would
over
be,
there are
yeah.
very old.
And yeah.
We got to interact with the Maasai Mara, and that was really fascinating.
Those are the ones that were actually in Out of Africa, right? The Maasai, they're the ones that run across the country. And
they run, and they're real colorfully dressed.
Yeah.
And they jump. The men jump. That's what they're
yeah.
known for. Did you
yeah.
know about that?
Yes.
So the higher jumpers are single men who have lots of girlfriends. The
uh-huh.
higher you jump, the better your chances of scoring with a young
lady. I saw
lady.
A documentary on this, actually. Someone did a doc on that. And it was pretty interesting watching all the jumping men.
I've got lots of jumping photos, actually.
I could see that. I mean, why not, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, why not have jumping men? And it is kind of interesting to watch. But is tourism affecting some of this all? Because
in a good way.
In
a good way.
Okay.
Because people are spending the money to see the animals and photograph the animals instead of shooting them. You know, in South Africa, it's still legal to shoot them. There are some hunting reserves in South Africa. But in Northern Africa, in East Africa, there aren't, and it's not legal. And not that it wouldn't happen. I mean,
yeah.
I did ask the vet. I had a meeting with the vet. We did a lot of behind the scenes. We did lion tracking, rhino tracking, learned how they do so many things behind the scenes at this Old Pejeta that I was at. And I highly recommend that, by the way, highly recommend. And I really would love to raise money for them, because the other thing that we saw were lots of dead animals. So down in Amboseli, where I saw the, which is on the southern Kenyan border, there hadn't had any rain, and it was like a dust bowl. It was, I've got photos where miles of nothing except one animal trying to eat, and dead animals around it, the wildebeest and the zebras just dying left and right.
Wow.
And it's like the hyenas and the cats can't keep up with it.
Wow.
I mean, some of them are just sitting there rotting, and some of them are feeding the predators. But so what this Olpegida is doing, they've dug a lot of wells and made little dammed up pools, and they'd like to do more of that. But the big thing they want to do is it still rains in Kenya, and they want to do water catchment.
Yeah.
You know, and build a bunch of big water catchment.
Yeah.
So if anybody's interested in that, I would love for them to get in touch with me, and I can tell them how to donate. And they do have a 501c3 in the U.S.
If you do an art show, you can do it and dedicate it towards that project.
There you go. That's a great idea. Thank you.
No, it'd be a very interesting thing. And I think, again, a documentary with that would be great, because once you pick your photos for the art exhibit, you have a basis for what you can do with the documentary as well.
Right.
It'd be nice to have that. It takes a lot. People don't realize how many pictures it does take for a documentary. It just eats up a lot of pictures.
It does.
Yeah.
And when I was working in film, they said, back then it was a 40-to-1 ratio. So you needed 40 hours of film to make 1 hour of documentary.
Now that's shocking.
Yeah.
I really would not have guessed that. I really would not. But when I was asking about tourism, and I know you were right about, you know, trying to help make tourism rather than doing killing the animals for the tusks and everything. It makes total sense, just like the whales here, etc. But when you talk about the guys in the tribe jumping, and I saw that. When I saw it on TV, it was like, well, these guys have just been kind of trained to put on a good show, which was kind of sad in a way. It was like, oh, these guys are just putting on a show with their costumes, and they just are doing it for the cameras and the people rather than really for, you're not really going to a real tribe. You're getting people who've learned to be actors, basically.
Well, they are. They are Maasai, because the Maasai are very tall.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't fake being a Maasai. They're very tall. And the other tribes around them are very short. So they are Maasai, but yes, how much of it is for entertainment purpose and how much of it is really their current lifestyle is a good question.
When you are doing your safaris, those are basically all on reserves or preserves, right?
Well, they're either a national park, and so I was on a lot of national parks with the safari because that's a more budget version, or the private conservancies. But they all have levels of accommodation, everything from the tents, the furnished tents, to huts, to five-star hotels. So,
and what was it like in the five stars when you get to stay there?
Oh, my gosh. We never got to stay long enough. I was like, can't we stay here another day, please? It was just so luxurious.
Really?
So luxurious. And the food, oh, my gosh, so exquisite. They do a lot of buffets for these safaris, but they do a good job. And they have stations set up where they're actually preparing, you know, whether it's an omelet for you in the morning or carving meat or whatever they're doing for you in the evening.
Was it under the stars ever? Did you ever spend night?
We did do one night safari, and we got to see, I saw things. We saw a bat-eared fox, which is a really little fox, really cute little fox. We saw porcupines. We saw, what are those? They're not anteaters, but they've got a long snout. Aardvarks.
Wow.
Yes. And we saw a lot of the daytime animals, too, but what they do at night is just fascinating. I mean, they're just laying there in the dark waiting to be eaten. It's fascinating.
So you've really gotten to love Africa.
I'm addicted, and I'm going to go back. I have to go back.
Really?
Yeah. And
see,
I'm probably going to do more volunteer work as well.
I've been to Egypt, but I've never really been to Africa. And I don't know. I don't feel drawn to it like I would, you know, like I feel drawn to Turkey. Definitely would like to go to Scotland again. I want to go to Ireland again. But for some reason, Africa doesn't quite, for some reason, doesn't seem to attract me to do that. And I don't know exactly why. What was the weather like? I mean, you're there in September, right? What was the weather in Africa in September?
Well, it's near the equator in Kenya. So it was warm. The evenings could be cool. I mean, it was nice to have blankets on the bed.
Really?
And but the days were pretty warm. And some days we needed a sweatshirt. If it was, if the sun was out, it was hot. And if it was cloudy, it was cold. So
you're, again, and your clothes that you've got, that you were doing for Turkey and for Scotland and for around
all of
Greece.
Well, I had to pack
Greece.
Those the last time I went to the boat. I had to have my Africa clothes, exactly.
It's pretty amazing. So after Africa, you went back to Croatia, to your home in Croatia?
No, I flew straight into Maui.
Wow, from Africa.
It took about 45 hours. It was awful. Oh, my gosh.
45 hours. Oh, my gosh. That is a marathon.
On Air Canada, I ended up going from Nairobi to Frankfurt to Vancouver and all the way back down to Maui.
Did you get some missed connections or anything?
No.
Well, that's good. 45 hours is a long time.
It is a long time.
And it's an expensive ticket, I heard.
Well, the Air Canada one wasn't too bad, but it would have been expensive if I'd gone through like New York or something.
Well, that's what I'm hearing. I mean, people tell me that going to Africa can be a very, very pricey ticket, which kind of blew my mind when I heard how much it could cost, you know? So it's probably smart going through Canada
and
everything.
There were direct flights from Istanbul to Nairobi.
Really?
Yes. It was so easy.
Wow.
And that was not expensive at all.
So
it was long, but
so
it was
you've left behind what you've left behind in the boats and
the boats in it. In Samos, Greece.
In Greece. Your place in Croatia now is rented out to another couple?
No, it's empty right now.
I want to go.
Well, go on.
I want to go.
I'll give you the keys.
I want to go. I need to go somewhere. In Croatia, does it get cold in the winter?
It does, yeah. But it also it's unpredictable. So you can be in T-shirt one day, and you can be in sweats and a heavy coat the next.
Wow. It's amazing to me. So you don't go back now again to maybe April?
Probably mid-April or third week of April. I usually go right after taxes.
How do people find you on Facebook and for your blog?
Well, Facebook and Instagram, I have a page called Maui MBT for Maui Mary Beth Tyson. And I also have my Facebook page, Mary Beth Tyson. And I also have a Facebook page for my psychotherapy, which is Maui Transformations. And then my blog is mbsworld.online, mbsworld.online.
It's fascinating to me that you've been able to create the life you've been able to create. And I think having not traveled like this in a while, I'm really craving it. It's so wonderful to hear about your adventures, Mary Beth. I mean, truly an amazing vacation, going through all of Turkey, going through Greek islands, going to Scotland, then going to Africa. What an amazing time. I mean, so thank you. It's so good talking to you and seeing you. It's been too long. So thank you for taking the time and coming
thanks
in.
Thanks for having me. I always love talking with you about it.
And thanks to our sponsors. We thank you, Ron from PwC, for making this show possible. Aloha.